All right. Thank you so much, Brooke. And hi, everybody. My name is Carrie. I am an alcoholic. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons Group, in beautiful Bend, Oregon. And I'm currently living in the disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. And tonight, we're going to try to get as much done as possible of working with others. But this is a big chapter, really big chapter. I think it's like 16 pages. So I'm probably not going to get all the way through it. And I did kind of focus a little bit. I looked through, and there's not much that I feel good about skipping. So we're just gonna get to it. One thing about the chapter working with others, and why it's so big, right, is because, and I said this last week, up until page 88, we have some pretty clear-cut instructions. I mean, the directions are very much like, this is a requirement, the first thing you need to do, and you must do this, and this is the, and it's pretty clear. All of the steps are in italics, and so you know where the step starts and where it ends. And then we get to working with others. And I'm not going to talk about traditions, but tradition 9 in the short form says AA as such ought never be organized. But our service committees may organize, right? What AA as such means is one alcoholic with another. What AA as such means is this 12th step. And I think that's why this chapter is so big. Yes, of course, we have to organize our groups, our districts, our intergroup offices. Of course, that stuff has to be organized. But when it comes to one alcoholic with another, that language of the heart, that can't be organized. And so I think that's why all of a sudden there's no more clear-cut instructions. And instead of saying things like, the first rule is, and the rule is, all of a sudden, in working with others, you'll hear time and time again, of course, there is no rule for this. And it'll say, if your prospect does this, you might want to try this. And if your prospect does that, you might want to try that. And so it's a pretty big chapter because this is where hopefully by this time in the steps and in the process, I have gotten a connection with my higher power and now I can be a conduit. And so I have to use discernment. And discretion. And that's pretty much what this whole chapter is about. One more thing I'll say about this chapter that you can kind of watch for as we go through is the chapter doctor's opinion, right? The chapter right before page one in the book. Really, this is just a reiteration of that from Bill's perspective. And if you take working with others and put it right on top of doctor's opinion, it pretty much says the exact same things in the exact same sequence, in even the exact same words, a lot of it. And so it's just a reiteration of what alcoholism is and how to get someone to identify. So, working with others, page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Intensive work. Well, what does that mean? Does it mean brewing coffee? I don't know. Does it mean giving somebody an outreach call? I guess it could. But if I look up the word intensive, it says extreme, concentrated, intense, careful, and exhaustive. So for me, I do need service work. In the third legacy of our program in third legacy service, I do participate in the service structure with the districts and the areas and GSO with the world service structure and the concepts and all that stuff. And that's our third legacy. But I don't do that to stay sober. I also have a service position at my home group. And again, I don't do that to stay sober. I do those things for the alcoholic not yet born so that they can get sober. Those things aren't going to keep me sober. Intensive work with another alcoholic, that's my own 12-step work. That has nothing to do with our third legacy. That is the spiritual principle of service as it relates to giving this thing away in order to keep it. And in some cases, like I see a sponsee in the room, Stephanie, some people have to give it away to get it. You know, some people have to give it away to get it. And so I'm just going to start. With that in mind, intensive, right? Intensive work with another alcoholic. That's what my 12th step is. When I'm on a committee, when I'm facilitating something at an area assembly, that is not my 12th step work. Just to be clear, that for me, that is not my 12 step work. So this is our 12th suggestion, and that's in italics, right? Because we're on the 12th step now. So carry this message, and the word "this" is highlighted in my book, and it has been ever since I was about 2.5 years sober, because for a long time I carried Carrie's message. And that's not the message that's in this book. I carried a message of my best thinking, thoughts, opinions, feelings, my predictions of what might be best for you. And I don't get to do that anymore. It was an ego feeding proposition, bad for me and bad for you. And so today I carry this message, and I always have to have that highlighted because it's a constant reminder to me, to other alcoholics. And there's an exclamation point right after alcoholics. So it's telling me who I have to carry this message to, not to other human beings, to other alcoholics, exclamation point. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Here's the 12-step promises, this next paragraph, and it's beautiful. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. They say it twice. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. That is true for me. That whole paragraph. Nothing more true has come true for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, except for those 12-step promises. And maybe the 10th-step promises and the 9th-step promises. Anyway, I guess all of them are great. Perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. They will only be too glad to assist you. Don't start out an evangelist or reformer. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You will be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent. You know, and let me just say, a lot of the time, if I'm in a big book study, I'll hear somebody all of a sudden, well-meaning, of course, say something along the lines of, yeah, and this was back in the day where you couldn't just go to a meeting and find an alcoholic, but we don't have to go, you know, to the doctors and ministers and hospitals and stuff like that today. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We absolutely do. That's what our whole service structure is for. We do carry messages into the treatment facilities. We do carry messages into the hospitals. We do go to ministers. We make sure that the CPC work gets done so that the ministers and the clergy and the professionals and the judicial system know where to send their clients and their patients and their clergy, right? They know where to send them because we do go there. We do that. We do. And so that's not outdated, not at all. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experience, that's a highlight of mine. Because notice how it doesn't say my own thinking or feeling experience. Notice how it doesn't say my own education with alcohol reform. It says my own drinking experience. You can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So because of my own drinking experience, I can be useful when a doctor who has a bunch of letters and stuff behind his name is helpless and hopeless. I can be useful because of my drinking experience. That's tradition 5. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. When you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste your time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. This advice can be given to his family also. They should be patient, realizing that they're dealing with a sick person. If there's any indication that he wants to stop, have a good talk with the person most interested in him, usually his wife. Get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, and his religious leanings. You need this information to put yourself in his place. You see how to see how you would like to be approached if the tables were turned. So what this is telling me is when I go on a 12-step call, you know, I got to be aware of my surroundings, and not just because I want to make sure that I'm safe. I want to make sure I'm bringing somebody with, but I want to be aware of my surroundings and how people are talking and what this person might think and feel and believe, because I don't want to say anything offensive that could blow the whole deal, right? Because I'm making a sale here. I'm sorry. That's what I'm doing, right? That's what Bill Wilson was trying to do as well. So what this means is I can be a Bible thumper, but I can't say get God or die in this 12-step call, right? Especially if maybe there's a Buddha on the porch or whatnot, right? Or if we walk in and there's a big cross hanging on the wall. I'm not going to start just going off about how this ain't a religious program and blah, blah, blah. And if you're sitting here drunk and you believe in God, then you need to try something different. And, you know, I don't get to do any of that. I ask him or her, I ask the prospect all I can, and I find out all I can about them before I open my big mouth, right? So that I know how to be helpful. So sometimes it's wise to wait until he goes on a binge. The family may object to this, but unless he's in a dangerous physical condition, it's better to risk it. Don't deal with him when he's very drunk unless he's ugly and his family needs your help. Wait for the end of a spree, or at least until a lucid interval. Then let his family or friend ask him. There's another highlight right here. That's a good one. It can be reconciled with page 58. Ask him if he wants to quit for good and not or, and if he would go to any lengths, any extreme to do so. So where have we heard that before, right? Page 58, where it says, if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So it's a two-parter. It's a two-part process there. If he wants to quit for good, not one day at a time, not just for today. If he wants to quit for good, or as Bill puts it, for good and for all, right, in Bill's story. And if he would go to any extreme to do so. If he says yes, right, because they're going to go over what if he says yes, what to do if he says no, what to do if he doesn't, if he's not sure. I mean, this covers it all. So if he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. Past tense. That's offering this prospect hope right from the beginning. We're not going to offer them the hope of, well, I've been recovering in AA for 13 years and I'm still an arm's length away from a drink. You want to come with me for that ride? Because I can show you how to white knuckle it from one meeting to the next and keep you sober just for today. No, no, no. I want to be the man with the real answer, right? Then it says that in the book too. I guess I'm a woman with the real answer. So his attention should be drawn to me as someone who has recovered. You should describe him. You should be described to him as a fellowship, as part of their own recovery. Try to help others, and who will be glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. Now, if he does not want to see you, so that's what happens if he says yes. Now, if he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. Neither should the family hysterically plead with him to do anything, nor should they tell him much about you. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. You may place this book where he can see it in the interval. Here, no specific rule can be given, right? And that's the first time it says that in the book, because up until this place, it's talking about all the rules. There's a lot of rules up until step 12. And this is saying there's no rule that can be given here. This is discernment and discretion. The family must decide these things, but urge them not to be over anxious, for they might spoil matters. Usually the family should not try to tell your story. When possible, avoid meeting a man through his family. Approach through a doctor or an institution is a better bet. If your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly unless he's violent. Let the doctor, if he will, tell him he has something in the way of a solution. When your man is better, the doctor might suggest a visit from you. Though you have talked with the family, leave them out of it in the first discussion. Under these conditions, your prospect will see that he's under no pressure. He won't feel, he will feel that he can deal with you without being nagged by his family. Call on him when he is still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. My husband calls that, he used to say that his gift of desperation had an expiration date, right? Because you're willing to go to any lengths for a whole 2 days. And then maybe I was making too big of a deal out of it, right? see your man alone if possible. And at first, engage in general conversation. Oh, you have kids. Oh, nice. Yes, I have one of my own. General conversation, right? After a while, turn the talk to some phase of your drinking. Not thinking, not feeling, drinking. Tell them enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak for himself, of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he's not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up until the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. So what we're going to do is we're not going to start out an evangelist or a reformer, right? Because that's what Bill did. You know, he was the worst 12-stepper in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous for those first 6 months before Silkworth finally told him, no, you got the cart before the horse. You're doing this all wrong. Don't say anything about the spiritual program. Don't say anything about the spiritual solution until the lights have come on about the bodily and mental, about body and mind, right? You want to make sure that they know that they're hopeless and that they can identify. You want to make sure that that magic of me too, which is why you're talking about their drinking, not their thinking, is achieved. Before you start to talk about the solution. So say nothing at the moment. They're going to tell us when to say something. So say nothing at this moment about how it was accomplished. If he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, right? Because we're looking for that magic of me too. We're looking for that identification. So if he's serious, tell him about the troubles liquor, not speeding, not fighting with your wife, liquor has caused you. Be careful not to lecture or moralize, right? So I'm not going to tell them, oh, well, your real problem is that you're selfish and self-centered. No, that's the solution is way down the line, right? We don't want to moralize. We don't want to we don't want to lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Right? This is called connection. This is called, oh my God, that happened to me too. This is trying to achieve identification. When he sees that you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. So what does that mean, right? Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads up to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. So that mental twist, which leads up to the first drink, which in the doctor's opinion says over and over again that the insanity that precedes that first drink, right? Like I swore it off forever. What could I have been thinking? All of a sudden, I was just drunk, even after I was stopped. Like, how did that happen? So after he matches some of those inconsistencies, the mental inconsistencies with some of your own, this is where we can start flipping the conversation. If you are satisfied that he's a real alcoholic. So that's a contingency, right? So one of the things that is my job to do as a potential sponsor, as someone who is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing, is I want to make sure that I'm not 12-stepping a non-alcoholic. I want to make sure that if I'm helping an alcoholic to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that they're alcoholic. Now, they don't have to be sure that they're a real alcoholic. They don't have to be satisfied. I don't get to brand him an alcoholic and tell him, nope, you don't qualify, or yes, you qualify. But I have to make sure for myself, I have to be satisfied that he's a real alcoholic. So let me give you a couple of scenarios, two entirely different sides of the spectrum. And then, of course, there's everything in between. So let's say somebody comes to me and they are not an alcoholic. But they want me to sponsor them. And they say, well, I'm willing to say that I'm an alcoholic because I do drugs alcoholically. And it's all the same thing. My counselor said so. And I say, okay, you know, and I'm thinking, yeah, right. They're alcoholic. I'm an expert, because this is how my ego tells me. I'm an expert at qualifying the prospect. I'll pull alcoholism out of them. No problem. Right. And so we go to page 44 and we go to page 21 and we go to the doctor's opinion, and I just can't find it. And I'm going, so yes, I understand that you're an addict. Let's stop talking about that for a second, but tell me what happens when you drink. And they say, well, I rarely drink alcohol because I don't like alcohol in liquid form. I mean, I guess what happens when I drink is I go and shoot heroin, or I go and do XYZ, or I pull my chair up to the refrigerator and I just start eating all the food in it, or whatever the case may be, right? I go home with a guy because I have a sex addiction, or whatever the case may be, but I don't reach for another drink. Why? Because I don't like alcohol. I don't like the way it makes me feel. No, I've never been drunk. Okay. So you know what? I think because I can't identify with you, I have some people in my phone who I think would be able to identify with you and probably would make a better sponsor. And I'm looking around the room right now and I see two of them in other 12-step fellowships, and they are in my phone, and I can give them the phone number without branding them non-alcoholic. It's not my job to do that. Now let's look at the other side of the spectrum. I got somebody who will not say that they're alcoholic. Oh no. Oh no, no. I just have a little drinking problem. I just need to quit drinking. I'm not an alcoholic. In fact, I could never be an alcoholic. I just need to go through these steps. I just need to go through these steps because for some reason I can't stay stopped, but I know I'm not an alcoholic because I could never become addicted to it because I am such a lightweight. Like, I drank two beers and I black out. I don't even remember. So I could never become an alcoholic. Oh, really? Well, because I drank two beers and I black out too. I mean, I always wake up wondering how much more I drank, but I've never been physically addicted to alcohol. I got off the elevator before I needed detox or having to go through DTs. Well, what do you mean? Oh, well, I'm not going to call you alcoholic. I mean, I would never do that. I would never insult you like that. But yeah, I can take you through the steps and you can see where you fall, right? Now, I am satisfied that the person, prospect number two, is a real alcoholic. I don't get to tell her that she's an alcoholic, but I'm satisfied and I can work with her, even if she doesn't want to call herself an alcoholic. Prospect number one, even though they're more than willing to call themselves an alcoholic, can't work with them because they're not an alcoholic. I'm not satisfied that they're an alcoholic. They've never even been drunk, so I can't work with them. So if you're satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, now I get to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. So now I can start talking about, you know, the spiritual aspect. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he's seen it and wishes to discuss it, right? Unless you've met him in a meeting or something like that. And be careful not to brand him as alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, if he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, right? I'm not going to lecture. I'm not going to moralize. If he's not too alcoholic, tongue in cheek, try not to sound too condescending when you say that, but insist that if he's severely afflicted, there may be little chance, and that he can recover by himself. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk to him. Talk about the conditions of body and mind, right? That twofold, again, body and mind and body, mentally and physically and mentally, that's coupled all throughout this book, which may accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell people, to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it'll serve a good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. Could you imagine? I don't blame doctors who beat around the bush and don't want to call people alcoholic because there's no solution. There's no pills to offer. There's no exercise regimen that's going to help. And so I would feel so helpless and worthless as a doctor treating an alcoholic patient when you have nothing in the way of a solution. I don't blame alcoholics. I don't blame doctors who don't want to treat alcoholics. And one doctor that I know, he's actually a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but he told me that doctors have come up with, they've gotten very creative with coming up with things to tell, like names. There's alcohol use disorder. There's so many things that they've come up with just so they don't have to brand somebody an alcoholic because there's no solution. Right. And a lot of people are quite frankly insulted if they were called an alcoholic. So substance abuse disorder or alcohol, you know, all of these different things are ways around a doctor having to tell someone you're alcoholic and there's no hope for you. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. But this is where we get to talk about the hopelessness of alcoholism because we offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he's alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well, right? Now, remember before it says, don't tell him how you got better. And now it's saying, let him ask you that question. We don't offer that information. We dangle it in front of his head going, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh yeah, I was even worse off than you. And then we wait and then we wait and we wait for them to say, well, but you're better. How did that happen? And then this is in italics. Now we get to tell him exactly what happened to you. Now we get to stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be atheist or agnostic, make it empathetic that he does not have to agree with your own conception, agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he like, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing, step two, to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. And I'll even take this a step further, not only to describe spiritual principles, but I try and fail miserably many of the time, but I try to use everyday language even to describe, like, I don't talk about, oh yeah, do you experience the phenomenon of craving and that queer mental twist before? No. I say, well, what's the matter with me is when I drink alcohol, I get more thirsty instead of quenched. You know, that's everyday language that I think everybody can understand. Because when you talk about an allergy and a queer mental twist that precedes the first drink and the phenomenon of craving that happened, it's like, what are you talking about? It's like you're reading from a 1939 book or something, right? So I use everyday language and just simply say, when I drink, 90% of the rest of the world, they get quenched and I get more thirsty. I can't stop. I don't have an off switch. And that seems to help. And spiritual principles as well, right? I want to use that everyday everyday language. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which you may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. Your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. His religious education and training may be far superior to yours. In that case, he's going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows, but he will be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked and why yours seem to work so well. He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient, right? Faith without works is what? Dead, right? So this is, again, telling us to be vital. Faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. It says this over and over and over again in the book, right? Faith on page 88, faith without works is dead. Well, what kind of work? The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12, working with others. Going back to page 14, yet again in Bill's story, it says, my friend emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all of my affairs. Particularly, it was imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, how? Through work and self-sacrifice for others, right? I mean, it says this over and over again in this book, and this is no different. My highlight here is to be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. Let him see that you are not there to instruct him in religion. Admit he probably knows more about it than you do, but call to his attention the fact that however deep is faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it or he would not drink. Perhaps your story will help him to see where he has failed to practice the very precepts he knows so well. We represent no particular faith or denomination. We are dealing only with general principles common to most denominations. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal. Step 4, right? How you straightened out your past and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help others when he escapes his own difficulties. So that's the only thing that I usually, and I have had women, I've had one buy me a fur coat. I have had, you'll get in uncomfortable situations because when an alcoholic recovers, it's like a miracle. They want to pay you back. And this is where, as a sponsor, I get to say, no, no, you pay it forward, right? The only thing you owe me is making sure to not hoard what I've shown you, but to turn around and give it to someone else. That's the only thing this whole program is about. And that's the only way you're going to end up keeping what you've been given, is if you give it away to someone else. Don't give it back to me, you know? So suggest how important it is that he play. And I remember the first time, I remember I went through my steps, right? And we get done reading Working with Others. And so now I'm like, okay, so now we're back on step one. My sponsor's like, excuse me? I'm like, so now we start at the beginning of the book? She's like, oh, no, no. Now you start at the beginning of the book with someone else. Unless you think that all of a sudden you have a problem with alcohol again and your problem hasn't been removed, now you get to go give it away to someone else. The first time through the steps is for me. Every time after that, I'm working someone else through. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under any pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, or for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him more about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. And I have had women who have come to, you know, they want to do X, Y, Z, but they're not super willing. It's like, oh, I'm so willing. I'll go to any lengths. What do you want me to do? I will push a peanut across Highway 97 with my nose. I will stand on my head in the corner and tell you, okay, get a home group and don't do service in other people's home groups. What? I can't do that. Oh, really? You know, it's like, it's all of a sudden it gets, oh, well, anything but that, anything but going through the steps. What do you mean we go through? I have to make a honest self-appraisal? Like, no, right? And it's like, okay, well, that's fine. And here is a list of phone numbers of people who have different requirements than I have, who do this thing differently, and they're not bad or wrong. There's a wrench for every nut. It's one of the very few AA sayings that isn't in the literature that is I actually agree with. You know, God knows I'm not for everyone. I mean, and thank God, ain't nobody got time for that. So I think that if the prospect isn't ready, and this has happened numerous times, countless times, I can't even think of how many times. I could name probably 10 off the top of my head. Of women who come, I give them my, you know, sponsorship guidelines, my expectations, what I do and what I don't do. I'll put that in the chat right now. And they will run past, away, out the door. And then when they get drunk some more, you know, sometimes it takes a couple months, sometimes it takes a couple years. One woman, it took 5 years. But when they show up on my doorstep crying, and ready to go to any lengths, they end up staying sober. Not because I keep them sober, but because they're finally willing to go to any lengths and to do what this book is suggesting to do. So your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all the program, like I was just saying, right? Oh, well, I work full time and I'm a mom. How can I make 2 meetings a week at my home group? He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. I don't want to tell someone else all of my like dirty, dark secrets. Hell no, right? Do not contradict such views. So I can say, I get it. I get it. I've been there, done that. I don't blame you, right? And I don't need to be condescending about it either, because I need to remain a safe place for when they get hurt more. Do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, which is true. I did. I didn't get sober when I first came to AA. It took me 9 months of trying to do it my way. But you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken action. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, lend him your copy of the book. Or take him to a meeting and get him his own. Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he's likely to say that you rushed him. So for me, what I do, and there's probably at least a dozen women in the room as I'm looking around who has heard my spiel, when you ask me to sponsor you, you know, I don't say yes. I don't say no. I've never told anybody no. But I say, let's go out for coffee or frozen yogurt or let's meet on Zoom, whatever. And we go down a list of this is what I don't do. Which I'll just open that up real quick and read what I don't do. I'll get stuck on time. I won't open that. You guys can look at it in your own time. But I go down the list of what I don't do, which is I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not a doctor. I am not a financial advisor. I'm not a taxi cab. I'm not a hotel. I'm sure as hell not a daycare. Like, I don't like kids and they like me even less. You know, I'm very honest and upfront about who I am, what I am, and then I go down the list of what I do. It is my job as a sponsor to walk you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're not acquainted with a home group yet, it's my job to help you to get acquainted, to introduce you to some people. After we get through the steps, it's my job to help you to learn how to use these tools, walking through life issues using these 12 steps until they become a working part of your mind. And it's also my job to help you to learn AA etiquette and the traditions and eventually about AA service structure, because I am a Three Legacy sponsor. And that means we will be going through the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and you don't have to go through the 12 concepts, but you will be respectful of them. You will not be doing service in other people's home groups. Concept four, you have the right of participation in one group, one member, one group, one vote. There are some things that you will need to trust me on if you don't want to go through the concepts and learn for yourself. And then I give you what I will expect of you, right? I expect you to have a home group. I expect you to be a participating member of that home group, in attendance at every monthly business meeting. I expect you to have an honest sobriety date, which in my lineage means XYZ. In your lineage, it might mean something different. And we go down the things that I will expect of you, the things you can expect of me, because if we go through into this relationship without this conversation, then 3 months down the road, you're not living up to any of my expectations. I'm not living up to any of your expectations because you thought you just hired a taxi cab for free. And we're both getting, it's just not working, right? And we've wasted each other's time. So I am of the mind that the more clarity and the more discussion right up front, the less time of each other's we waste. And the last thing that I do that's on that paper, and you'll see it if you print out the guidelines, my expectations, is there's three additional phone numbers in because I don't want you to rush. Even if you haven't ran out the door screaming yet at my expectations, even if you're still sitting in my living room going, yeah, I still want to go through with it, I'm still going to say, you know, let's take 24 hours. I want you to call these other phone numbers, see if you click with one of the other women. I'm not the only house on the block. And if you still want to start working together, we will start ASAP, but I want you to take 24 hours. And so that is why I do that, is because of right here. It says, you know, to take your time, and he's likely to say you rushed him. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop, right? I let him know. I'm like, there is no wrong way to do this. Like, the only, it doesn't matter who's right in AA, it matters who's left, right? And there's lineage lines that do things like this over here, which is like, oh, well, you sit in the front row, text check-in from every meeting 20 minutes early, and you call me at 7 o'clock a.m., not 7:01, and you do this and keep your legs closed for, you know, 90 days, and you don't date for a year or whatever the case may be. And that works for some people. It really does. I've seen it work for a lot of people. It wouldn't work for me, but it does work for people. And then I've seen lineage lines over here that are like, hey, if it ain't in the first 164 pages, it ain't AA. We don't need to go through the traditions. We don't need to. That works for some people too. And everything in between. The only thing that I have seen that does not work for anybody is cherry picking. Oh, I like that out of that lineage. I like that out of that sponsorship line. I don't like that, so I'm not going to use that. But I'm going to take this. I say pick a side and ride, right? Jump in with both feet. And if it don't work, get out. Get to another sponsor. Because I mean, my best thinking got me here. That's another one that I hear often. I don't know if I like that or not, but that fits it with this. So I'm going to use it. So I don't talk down, to an alcoholic from any spiritual or moral hilltop or lineage. I don't say, you know, well, my girls stay sober. I just, you know, if you need to try something else, then it might work. And if it doesn't, I'll still be here because it's been working for me for some time now. So, you know, I'm still going to be here. I'm still going to be willing. You're not burning any bridges. Simply lay out this kit of spiritual tools for his inspection, which I do in my sponsorship guidelines. Show him how they have worked for you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. If he's not interested in your solution, because he expects you to only act as a banker or financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, right? That's why I go over what I don't do before I even get into what I do. Then you have to drop him until he changes his mind. Then this he may do after he gets hurt some more. And again, I've seen that dozens of times. And believe me, it's much more easy to work with someone who is willing than someone who is skeptical. So another drink or two sometimes is what people need. I know I needed that. I needed that for myself. My husband's now sponsor, who wasn't his sponsor at the time because my husband wasn't sober, but I, you know, he was on my fourth step, David C., because he, when I was getting sober or trying to get sober, he actually gave me a $20 bill and said, "It sounds to me like you need to go drink some more because you ain't done." And I did. I drank at him. I did not even touch his $20 bill. I let it fall. I did not, you know, I let him pick it up. I would not take it, but I definitely went and got drunk at him. And I took that. And I took every opportunity for 9 months, putting 3 to 5 days together. And thank God, because now I can sit here and tell you without a shadow of a doubt, I am a real alcoholic, and I checked off all the boxes, and I needed every single drop that I had to get me a first step experience. And I'm so grateful for all those old timers that I left time after time and drank at because of them loving me and caring more about me than my feelings. They saved my life. And all of those old timers that I couldn't stand, all of those people I would avoid who brought their own big books to meetings as if we didn't have big books in the meetings, all of those people that I couldn't stand back then, they're still here. The people I thought were cool, where are they? They're either drunk or in jail. So it's we're on page 95. We'll try to get through the rest of the chapter next week. Back to you guys.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos, and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.